Hi, good morning. I'm here with Chris Clifford from the Private and Public Gallery. Just here today asking a few questions about the gallery, and he's going to ask me a few questions about insurance. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jim. Nice to see you.
Thanks Chris, for coming in. The gallery, obviously, I frequent the gallery quite regularly. I just want a little bit of details what you do as a gallery and what offering you can offer our private clients, service-wise, etc.
So the gallery has been established since 2016. We're just over 5 years old. You will note, because you've been here, that it's on the first floor. It's not a retail space in the traditional sense. It was set up as a private client art advisory business for high net worth and ultra high net worth clients. Over time, we've changed the dynamic of the space and we've opened it up to the public for exhibitions. But essentially what we do is sell high value and investment grade art. That's art that continues to rise in value over time. Predominantly, our clients come in the professional services sector, lawyers, bankers, accountants, tax advisors, as well as wealthy individuals that have moved to Jersey in recent times. So that's predominantly the client demographic, and we offer a range of services from valuations, collections management, insurance advice. Obviously, that's a key part of what we do. But it's also about advising clients on their collections, when to buy things at the right time, when to sell things at the right time. So it's a range of professional services that we offer to our clients.
And when you value a piece of art, can you just give me a little bit of information on how you do that?
So art valuations are a lot easier today to do than they were prior to the internet. The internet has been a great democratizer of the art market. I wouldn't say that the art market was unscrupulous prior to the internet, but I've heard lots of stories of dealers in London adding an extra naught onto the price of a painting. Yeah. When, say, a client's come out and had a very good lunch and walked into a gallery and decided to buy something and they've paid $100,000, where maybe they could have paid $10,000 for it. Nowadays, everybody can check. And the big auction houses like Sotheby's, Christie's, Bonhams and Phillips all have a search engine function on there where you can type in the name of the artist and then you can hit return and it will throw up all the previous lot sales. So members of the public can understand what the value of an artwork is. And the other aspect that dealers can use nowadays are online indices, ArtNet, ArtPrice, ArtMarket Index. They're all subscriber-based websites, but they aggregate every single sales record that's publicly available so that you can find out whether an artist is an investment asset going forward or not, basically. Mm. So the internet, as I said, is the great democratizer of the art market.
Mm. Well, myself, if I came along to you and said, Chris, you know, I've got $500,000 here. I want to start collecting art. Where would I go? You know, literally, I know nothing about art, Chris. So I just wonder, what's the best investment? It would be your investment. And then also, you know, do you find when the clients come and see you, is it investment or that some people are investors, some of people are passion, want the art bit and they're hanging on their wall?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. If you came to me with £500,000, I would probably say, let's not spend the money in a hurry. All art dealers will say, buy it because you like it first, because if you're going to take it home and have it on your walls, you've got to enjoy it. Now, there are those clients that have been buying and selling art for a lot of many years. They see it as an alternative asset class, like jets, like wine, like boats, like, you know, houses. And they maybe have become a bit more hardened to the market and they don't necessarily want it to be in their house. So they will buy something through me. I'll advise them on undervalued sections of the market or artists that I believe have got a long way to go before their artworks reach what we call full market maturity. And then they will buy and put it into a secure storage facility, often in Switzerland, like a bonded warehouse, wait for 4 or 5 years until the price of the artist's work has gone up considerably again before selling it at auction. So those are the well-worn routes, but obviously There are lots of other aspects of the market. You can sell through dealers. You can sell privately yourself to friends. It's entirely up to you which way you go, but everyone will have a cost associated to it.
But like everything in life, things go up and things go down. Do you follow trends like that? Is there certain artists will actually go up and then some go down?
Absolutely. The best example of that is actually an artist who's got Jersey connections. Sir John Everett Millais was a Pre-Raphaelite painter from the 19th century, part of a group of artists who painted highly realistic, detailed images of romanticised landscapes in England. And they were inordinately popular when they were first active, as I said, in the late 19th century. One particular image which was painted by John Everett Millais was called Bubbles. And it was a picture of a young child sitting on the edge of a sink with a soap sud bubble floating up in front of them. It was a beautiful painting. And when it was sold for something like £65,000 in...
Wow.
I think it was 1878. Now that would be well over £1 million in today's money. It was an inordinately expensive work of art. But of course, tastes and fashion changes, and people didn't want that chocolate box, kind of kitschy sort of romanticized idea of life as the sort of the 20th century emerged. They wanted modernist things with new ideas. So that painting was then sold at auction, I think, in the 1920s, and it went for something like £10,000.
Wow.
So there was amazing. A massive reduction in the value of it. Subsequently, in the second half of the 20th century, there was a big revival in interest and in fashion by the Pre-Raphaelites art movement, and that painting went on to sell for £12.5 million.
It's crazy, isn't it?
So any art dealer has a responsibility to their client if they're advising them to be aware of those trends, and artists' prices will go up just as they will go down, as you rightly say.
So yeah, I suppose the demographics are changing as well. Age groups are changing, younger generations coming in. I've heard quite a bit recently about NFTs. I've been reading up on it as well a little bit. It's quite exciting, to be honest with you. Last night I was reading at home about the token is actually the artist's signature. Which is, you know, it's all new stuff to me, to be honest with you. Have you come across that much in Jersey at all?
We have advised clients on acquiring and selling NFTs. It's a relatively new market still. It's an interesting space, but it perhaps isn't as interesting as people might initially think. There was a sale in March 2021 of NFTs. It was the first time an auction house had done a sale. It was Christie's in New York, and they sold a work by an American artist called Beeble Crap.
Yeah.
And it sold for $63 million.
Yeah.
And the whole of the art market thought this was the brand new beginning of something amazing, and that you simply had to mint an artwork as an NFT on the blockchain, and then instantly it would be worth millions. That didn't happen.
It hasn't. Right.
It hasn't happened. Millions of artists rushed onto platforms like Ethereum and OpenSea and minted their NFTs, only to find that they couldn't sell them. The market became flooded. The other issue that NFTs face, of course, is that you pay for it in a cryptocurrency. And as we've seen recently, there was one particular currency that was devalued overnight that lost trillions and trillions of dollars globally. And that obviously affects the market as well. So it's open to wider exposure, which does ultimately affect its long-term performance.
Yeah. I believe it's the biggest area in the world where it's actually increasing at the moment is in Asia. Obviously, people got a bit more money out there. They're looking at different ways of investing it.
It is an option. There have been some spectacular successes, but they don't seem to be as well reported as the failures at this stage. So I'm keeping an open mind. You need to be, at the end of the day, sure that the artwork itself and the artist that's producing it are highly credible. It's no different really to a physical work of art. It's just another way of displaying it and storing it. So bad art is bad art regardless.
Right. You say, when did you first move into the premises here?
2016, so we've been here just over 5 years now, yeah.
Must admit, it's phenomenal, isn't it? You know, we've been here several times for exhibitions, parties, etc. people just love coming here. It's just, it's a nice premises.
It's, that's very kind of you to say. It wasn't when we first took it on. It, Somerville House had been the old RBSI Treasury building. It was a rabbit warren of tiny little offices and suspended ceilings. And fortunately, our next door neighbours, Axis Mason, the architects, were able to project manage the whole thing from start to finish and did a good job in making it as big and as light and as airy as it is. So hopefully it feels like the kind of exhibition space that you might come into if you were in a gallery in New York or in London. I wanted it to have that feel of like a museum, if you like.
Yeah. I think, you know, you've got a great following in Jersey. When we talk about Jersey, I'm always interested in local artists.
Yeah.
Obviously you've seen probably many come and go through since you've been in the art world. Who's the new ones coming up and coming at the moment?
Well, we've got a show on at the moment with it's two artists, and I always like to pair young emerging artists with well-established artists. That's quite a good recipe to suggest to an audience that the well-established artist also has a following of younger artists, and the show that we've got at the moment is called On the Road. And it's a showcase of work by the writer, the poet, the musician, and now artist, Bob Dylan. Which, of course, you and I will know because we're of a certain age. Yeah. But not everyone below 30 may not.
Yeah.
But Bob Dylan, Nobel Prize winning writer and musician and artist, is showing here at the moment a series of prints that were made during his travels across America. Which was very reminiscent of a very famous work of literature called On the Road by Jack Kerouac, the beat writer from the 1950s and 60s. And to complement it, I brought in the work of Jacques Le Breton, who is Jersey-based now landscape painter, who also paints roads and journeys, but within a very local context. And the combination of the two makes a fascinating exhibition. You can see how they're artistically quite similar in lots of ways, but also complementary and different at the same time. So it's a platform and a showcase for him. He's done very well, Jacques. He's sold quite a lot of things, so I think he's one for the future.
And you helped promote him outside the Channel Islands?
We have an international clientele, coming back to the internet again, the great democratizer of the art market. We did an exhibition 18 months ago with a girl called Florence Hutchings, who's an outstanding young British painter. She'd recently graduated from the Slade and done a couple of sellout shows in the UK and Europe, and we brought her here. Everything in the exhibition sold to international clients before we opened the doors to the local audience on the preview day. So we had clients from Buenos Aires, Amsterdam, New York, London, Taipei, all over. So yeah, it has a profile that
coming
way.
Back to that just quickly. So overseas clients, when they buy a piece of art from yourself, do they arrange for the transit of the art to them to be shipped?
Or do you help? We do everything. Well? We do everything. We provide a turnkey solution for them, so there's no risk on their side. We organise the packing, the wrapping, the shipping, the insurance if necessary, to ensure that they get their artworks to them.
But you know, funny story here, Chris. Obviously, you remember when we did sponsorship your exhibition, it went a bit wrong, didn't it? Something got shipped to, was it New Jersey instead of Jersey?
It was a mildly terrifying situation to be faced with at the time. We were looking at getting some artworks from a very famous artist from Jersey originally, a guy called Jason Martin, and I'm not going to mention the name of the shipper on a podcast, but they sent the artworks from his studio in Portugal, where he's now based, to New Jersey, and this was only 5 days before we were due to open, so there was some interesting conversations had between myself and them to get it here on time, and it was a bit lastminute.com, but no one knew on the night.
No, except for me. That's good, it's good. Well, thanks, Chris, anyway, for answering my questions.
My pleasure. So, Jim, we're going to turn the tables now, and the focus is on you for a moment, and there's a few questions that I'd like to ask you. Firstly, who are your clients and how do you select an insurer?
Right, that's quite an interesting question, to be honest with you. I have numerous clients. Obviously, as you know, Chris, we deal with quite a lot of wealthy private clients, high net worth clients in the Channel Islands and the UK. But we also deal with a lot of trust companies in the Channel Islands who actually look after the art for beneficial owners all over the world, to be honest with you. When we select an insurer, now, we're a broker, so we're independent. We can go out to the market and look at all different insurance companies. Now, we have acts of art. You know, when someone comes to an art collection, they do a specific art policy just to cover art alone, but they also do a high net worth home policy. We have options like Aviva, and we also have our parent company, FU Mutual, who offer a bespoke home policy with an art section within that policy. When you look at coverage, all coverage is very similar within the policy wordings. It covers basically the art whilst in the property on an all risk basis. And when I say all risk, people say, what does all risk mean? I mean, all risk accidental damage cover. If that piece of art falls off the wall, if water damage, if it has water leaking pipe, it covers for everything, to be honest with you. Okay. But also it covers it on all risk worldwide basis. So it covers it all over the world, to be honest with you. Subject to being packed, if it's being shipped, subject to being packed correctly and handled by a proper art shipper. So that'd be fully covered. You know, we don't only just limit cover to private clients. We also cover galleries as such as yourselves. We do art fairs, and we also cover artists as well. Whilst they're painting the art in their property, in their studios, numerous different but various art we cover all over the world, to be honest with you.
So it's a pretty comprehensive package all round that you can provide to your clients.
Yeah, it's very comprehensive.
So Jim, typically what does one of your private client home insurance policies cover you for when it comes to fine art?
It's as I mentioned just now, it's basically for fine art. It will cover it for accidental damage cover on a risk basis.
Yeah.
It covers all the normal perils, water damage, fire, lightning, etc. But it also, there's extensions to cover defective titles. Basically, you've probably come across defective titles where a client of mine has bought a piece of art, has it sat on his wall for 6 or 7 years, and basically all of a sudden he gets a letter for a lawyer saying actually the person what sold you this piece of art they shouldn't have sold it to you.
Yeah.
And the vendor, you know, didn't have the right to send that bit of art for you.
Yeah.
And the original owner of that piece of art wants it back.
Yeah, sure.
So the insurance company will indemnify you and cover you for that, you know, if you have to return that bit of art. But more importantly, it will also cover you for the legal costs to fight that case against the person who's trying to get a bit of art back. I don't know if you ever come across that, Chris, ever at all.
Yeah, well, having legal title is the most important thing. If I'm taking works on consignment from other dealers or from individuals for exhibitions that I'm staging here in Jersey, you've got to know that they are the owners of the artwork, and you've got to see proof of ownership, invoices, legal title, any bits of paperwork that stand up the ownership issue is important. And if I don't have that, I can't sell it. It's just not.
But it does happen though, doesn't it? It does happen, unfortunately, in the art world. Probably not in Jersey, but probably worldwide, I would imagine. Yeah.
In a big international marketplace where sometimes not all the checks and balances would be in place. Mm. And sometimes if people make an impulse buy and they don't check all the information, then those things can inevitably happen. That's human error. So in that scenario, should the worst happen and say I needed to make a claim on my insurance, how do insurers usually settle those claims?
Well, again, they will look at the piece of art, they look at the value of the piece of art. You know, all policies have a single article limit under them. They have a miscellaneous art section, might cover miscellaneous pieces of art up to, say, for example, £10,000. Anything above £10,000 will be specified on the policy. They would want to see a valuation, a purchase receipt, up to date valuation, how much that piece of art is worth.
Sure.
And now, if that piece of art was to become damaged in your house by a water leak, what they initially will look at is, they would look at the restoration costs, see how much it will cost to repair that piece of art, and how viable is it? Can that be shipped to the person originally, the repairs shop who can do that? Alternatively, if it can't be repaired, they will look at the actual up to the sum insured of the policy if it's not specified. But if you have it specified over the £10,000, they will fully identify you for that.
Okay, thanks for that, Jim. So tell us a little bit more. What are some typical exclusions when it comes to my collections insurance?
Well, all policies have a policy excess.
Yeah.
So if you have a loss, you have a policy excess under that section. It can range from 1,000 sorry, £100 to £5,000.
Yeah.
Depends what you select when you take your policy. Also, they will, the insurers will look at the piece of art that's been damaged. Is it in bad condition? Has it been well maintained? Has it deteriorated at all? And where has it been stored? You know, you've probably seen, Chris, you know, some people do keep art and store art in less desirable places. You know, I came across a picture the other day. It was kept in a basement. And when the client showed me, it was covered in mould.
I'll tell you a funny story. I sold a very expensive Andy Warhol print to a client and in Jersey, and I delivered it to their property, and they decided that they wanted to put it in their kitchen. Now, this print is a work on paper. It was a 1964 silkscreen print that was made in the factory in New York, and a very expensive six-figure piece, and they wanted to put it in their kitchen, and they wanted me to install it beneath the kettle and the toaster. And I said, that's not a great idea, guys. No. And they insisted that that was the best place for it to be displayed. And I did say to them at the time, you're going to get moisture and condensation inside the frame. It's going to cause a mold. It's called foxing in the trade.
Right.
And that will ripple, and it will cost you some money to repair it. And they said it will be fine. And I walked away and I shook my head and I said, look, guys, I'd rather you didn't. But they did.
Yeah.
And 6 months later, they called me up and said, this print's covered in mold and ripples.
Yeah.
And so we had to make an insurance claim. They had to make an insurance claim, but we had to send it off to a specialist picture restorer in the UK, Simon Gillespie. He's got the Queen's Royal Warrant for picture restoration, and it was an expensive exercise. It cost them over £20,000 to repair it properly. Wow. So those horror stories do pop up from time to time.
And they are fascinating. We do hear them sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, when we're talking about restrictions under policies and exclusions, each person really needs to know, look at their policy wording, because normally there's an occupancy clause of 60 days. A lot of the high net worth clients, we go away travelling abroad. They may leave Jersey in the winter months for 4 or 5 months. That will obviously on the policy wording, so they normally have people visiting the house. And also, the real high value art would have restrictions on the policy and requirements for security.
Yeah.
They'll have alarms,
yeah.
CCTV cameras, etc. You know, all I would say is, for my private clients, talk to us. They phone us quite frequently, and you know, we want to know. Dealing with private clients is not just dealing with a normal individual. It's knowing all about their lifestyle, where they travel, where are their properties, and about their families. You know, and when they're not in Jersey or in other locations, where are they? Who's looking after the house?
Yeah.
It's quite important, to be honest with you.
You have a very personal relationship with your clients, as art dealers often do as well.
Yeah.
So you have sponsored one of our recent art exhibitions. And so if, for example, a client purchased a piece from me, from the gallery, and then subsequently forgot to advise you or their insurers, what's your general stance should something go wrong?
Well, again, it depends on the individual policy wording, but majority of insurers, I would say 9 out of 10, would fully cover you, identify you, up to a period of insurance, 30 days, 60 days. They will cover you for the purchase costs, as long as you advise your broker and insurer in the time period. You know, quite frequently, a client will go and buy a piece of art or even a collection of art and expect someone else to advise our broker, and sometimes it doesn't happen. And when it comes round to the annual renewal, you send the renewals to their agent, and they go, well, the collection or that piece of art's missing, but we've never been notified. So it's, you know, this is where I think it's quite, people like yourself, it's quite prudent to talk to your clients about that. And then, you know, if a client might want you to talk to us direct and not actually go through a third party.
I have about, I suppose, 25, 30 clients over here that have got what I would call stellar art collections. And one of the things that I have to do with each of them annually is to reappraise the value of the collection. I give them a current market valuation, which is effectively an insurance document, a replacement value should anything go wrong. And it's something that serious collectors are fastidious about. And it's an important part of having an art collection, is having the right kind of insurance in place. So it takes some time, especially with the big collectors. They've got you know, 80, 100, 150 serious works of art in their property, some of them in a reserve collection in the basement, all of which needs to be kind of, you know, humidified and controlled, temperature controlled and maintained. It's a big responsibility, but these collections can often be worth 50, 100, 200 million pounds.
Yeah, we would encourage all our clients to keep up to date schedules of their art collections and get them valued frequently. And that's quite sensible for them. So at the worst scenario, if something does go wrong, at least you've got an up-to-date valuation on file and the insurance company can't argue against it. Because, you know, people say that insurance companies don't want to pay claims, but we always look at possible ways to pay claims and to pay them fairly, to be honest.
Jim, it's been a fascinating interview talking to you today. I hope that it's been helpful for you to understand a bit more about my business as well. And hopefully we can do another one of these in the not too distant future.
Yeah, and likewise, no, it's been great having a chat to you today, Chris. We look forward to working closely with you going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.